Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
American singer-songwriter and visual artist Rachel Sage joins us for a second time on Celeb Savant. She is the founder of indie label Impress Records. Rachel was named one of the top 100 independent artists of the past 15 years by Performing Songwriter magazine. She has built a reputation as an electrifying live performer, gracing stages across the world. She has shared the spotlight with legends including Imelda May, Howard Jones, Sean Colvin, and Judy Collins, with whom she recorded a critically acclaimed duet of Neil Young's Helpless. Most recently, she has opened for the likes of Lulu, Will Young, and Hue and Cry. Her festival appearances have spanned from SXSW and Edinburgh Fringe to Isle of Wight and The Great Escape, consistently captivating audiences with her distinctive mix of folk, Americana, and pop. Rachel's latest body of work, Canopy, is due to be released in October of 2025. Up next on Celeb Savant, catching up since we last spoke and discussing her latest projects, is Rachel Sage. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
Well, firstly, thank you for having me back. Always a pleasure. I am in upstate New York in the Hudson Valley, where I tend to touch down these days between tour dates.
And you're doing well?
I'm having a great summer so far. I've been on the road with my dear friend and collaborator, Kristen Ford, on our Joy Equals Resistance tour, which is promoting both of our new music. Yeah, it's been great so far. So,
is it a co-headline tour between yourself and Kristen?
It is. And I haven't done something like that in quite a while, certainly since before COVID. So it's very empowering and it's been really great to discover her music. I knew her by name only pretty much until this all came together. But it's been great because she's no fear and she'll just ask me to play keyboards on something I've never heard before and I dive in and try to rise to the occasion. So it's been really, really a lot of fun.
How do you personally, from your own experience, approach a co-headlining tour compared to a headlining tour? What's the difference in the approach-wise in the organization and planning for it?
It's a great question. So in theory, one would think that we would just be sort of splitting the usual amount of work in terms of booking and promotion and just kind of sharing the love in that way. What ends up happening, I think, because Kristen and I are both very like type A, a little obsessive and like and super driven, is that we just take on twice as much. You know, as of a couple of days ago, our tour was supposed to end at the end of August. And now we're going to have a chat about booking all of September as well. So this is what happens when like-minded musicians and kindred spirits get together. We just don't want the fun to end.
I love that. And I know you've opened up for other artists, for example, Hue and Cry and a bunch of different artists. What's the difference between being an opening act compared to headlining your own show?
Well, I mean, for instance, the other day I played in my hometown up here in upstate New York at a beautiful performing arts center, and we got to really spread out. I had my full band there. We played, you know, almost 2 hours. There was an encore. You know, you really get to kind of stretch out, almost move in for the night, and then hang out afterwards, talk to everybody. You know, the party kind of continues. So it's just a different type of an ethos that you embrace for that evening. If I'm supporting someone, a lot of my job is to literally warm up the crowd, just get them excited to hear what's next and loosen them up and get them singing along. So I might, for instance, choose to do a cover or some older material that maybe some of my folks who've come to see both of us may know. And at a headline show, I may take more risks and play something brand new, sort of embrace the possibility of spontaneous, you know, new things happening. I wouldn't do that probably if I was playing in a huge theater opening for Howard Jones or whatever.
A lot of people on the outside of the industry and observing you guys think, oh, it's so glamorous. You're on the stage, you're in this country, you're here, you're in this hotel, blah, blah, blah. But it's not that easy. It is quite challenging. I know, I've seen it. They just think, see the end result of being on the stage, but there's sound check, there's unpacking, there's planes, trains, automobiles. How do you experience it for yourself, remain grounded, mentally, physically, etc.? And what would you say to those people who think that it is all glamour?
Well, you know what's interesting about your question is that if you had asked me that a few years ago, I would have agreed with you 100%. But I actually think that's changed quite a bit because of social media. I don't know that listeners and fans actually think it is all glamour anymore because there, first of all, there are people like Kesha, you know, letting us know that it hasn't been all glamour, even for the very top tier, you know, mainstream success, quote unquote, artists. But also, we're sharing a lot of the behind the scenes. So we're sharing the hotel rehearsal, you know, where the keyboard's on the bed and I'm sitting on the radiator, or we're sharing being in the van and running late, but being excited. And, you know, I think if we're doing our best to kind of be authentic and really maintain that thread and that connection on stage and off, listeners now are getting, you know, for better and worse, they're getting a glimpse of the part that's glamorous and the part that's not so glamorous. And I'm okay with that because as a theater artist as well, I'm always interested in going to see performances where that fourth wall is broken. Mm-hmm. You know, for instance, even there are Broadway productions now where you see the camera people on stage and everyone's in black. And, you know, obviously one of the first people to do that in pop was Natalie Imbruglia with her video. And you're seeing them take down the set and you're seeing the folks just break it all down. So yeah. For me, it's all one thing. And I think it's glamorous just to get to make art. I think it's glamorous to get to connect with human beings. You know, I dress the way I do going to the grocery store as I do on stage. I know that seems eccentric, pretty much true these days. I have so fully let go of caring what other people think anymore that if it's, I think the term is dopamine dressing, you know, yeah. If it cheers me up and kind of gets me through the up and downs of the world chaos and bad news and kind of arms me internally to hopefully be a better person in my own life and with my own interactions, I'm going to do it. I'm going to wear that gold lamé to go get the mail.
I love that you said that you, over time or now, you don't really, or not bothered by really what other people think. And yet, for many other people with the advent of social media, it's become more apparent of like, oh, I need to get the likes. I need to get the positive comments. I need to be filtered because it's all about the filters. And yet, as you've discussed, you're being authentic on social media like many of us are. For the listeners who are struggling with that whole concept of I need to get the likes and someone unfollowed me and avoiding the trolls, what advice would you give them having been through the process of now letting go of the thoughts of what others think?
I love that question. And first of all, this has been a hard one to feel that way in myself. I've been doing this a long time. This is my 17th album coming out. And, you know, I started when I was a tween. So suffice it to say, I started writing songs because I was being bullied. And it was a way for me to get through it and to, you know, share the things kind of cryptically, poetically in pop songs that I didn't even feel like I could tell my parents, whether it was the mean girls at school or struggling with my own identity, just whatever it was, I could put it into a song and make art out of it. And that was a kind of catharsis. And then that gradually shifted into not only doing that for myself, but attempting to be kind of eyes and ears about other people and their experiences, and then putting that into the music as well. And that lens has sort of widened through the years. And I think my newest music is actually almost entirely not about me and more about the wider world. So I would just say, you know, start small. Like, it's a miracle these days if we can just get up out of our beds, get a good breakfast, take a walk, and start our day with a positive mindset and a cheerful hello to someone we encounter. And, you know, one thing at a time, obviously, always. But for artists, in particular, trying not to be overly consumed about what other people think, their judgment, self-judgment, all of that. I think a lot of that, unfortunately, you have to live and kind of go through it and feel it and struggle with it to come out the other side. So there isn't like a quick for actually, you know, caring what other people think of you. But I will say surrounding yourself with people who don't want anything from you. You know, they're not on your payroll. They're people who would, your ride or die, as folks would say now, you know, like magnifying your actual besties and that circle of, you know, that sort of round table of people you trust is so important. People who aren't just guessing you all the time. They're going to tell you what they think is actually in your best interests. And they're going to tell you when you're, you know, maybe off track and you get the choice to either listen or go in a different direction. But I think that level of, you know, just friendship and loyalty is the most grounding thing. And we've seen it even from celebrities who are role models. Someone like Taylor Swift, I think it was amazing when she kind of went through her hyper phase with talking about how her girlfriends meant so much to her. Mm. And it's very genuine and thoughtful. And I'm sure it was because she probably really needed that just to stay mentally healthy and to be exactly who she wanted to be.
Yeah, I completely relate because I was also very much bullied at school. I didn't speak about it much because in those times, you know, it wasn't really spoken of or really focused on. And I remember in my mind, the way I coped with it was I created fictional realities in my mind. So I remember I loved the Mickey Mouse Club. So in my mind, I was one of the Mouseketeers and I was popular and cool. And that's how sort of I separated myself in my brain. But having gone through that, you know, still a struggle. There's still this thing of like, oh, did I do the right thing? Are they going to be cross with me? You know, I still have that struggle in my brain. So I completely relate. And it is a journey.
I'm still a people pleaser. Take that breath now and have the perspective. You used that word earlier to recognize, to kind of separate what you're feeling and what you're thinking in that Eckhart Tolle kind of way.
Yes.
Of seeing that who you are is not necessarily your emotions and your thoughts in that moment. And you're going to get through it. You're going to get to the other side. And I think what you just said about visualizations, projecting a goal or a dream frequently is so helpful to just be like, you know what, this is petty and silly and minor. And by this time next week, I'm going to be doing X, Y, Z, or this time next month or next year. And have your, what do they call it? This sort of vision boards, yes, and things like that. I mean, I'm a hippie at heart, so I love all that stuff.
What's been happening since we last spoke? You've been traveling, you've been touring. Let's unpack. You've got new music coming out.
Yes, exactly. I actually have three new singles out. Yes. First, Canopy in the spring, and then Just Enough came out in June around Pride. And I literally just dropped my brand new single, Live It Up. So that is out now. And a lot of this material and the content on this album is about inclusivity and like the title of the album, Canopy, about kind of keeping that dialogue, the sides of that tent open for people to come in and go out and feel safe. You know, like we're all under the same stars. We're all going through this together and to just try to resummon our collective humanity without tearing each other apart. So,
yeah,
you know, not too ambitious, haha. But I picked that title because it just felt very resonant for me. And in particular, that song is about trying to let everyone have a voice, to take time to listen and to not cancel each other. It seems like such a simple concept to be able to go back to a time when we could sit down and talk to one another,
yeah,
but it has become very, very difficult. So I'm going to do my part to try to, you know, as the retro girl I am, bring back the diplomacy.
Did you collaborate with any other writers, no, artists? Tell us.
Well, I recruited my longtime band, The Sequins, and this is actually effectively our band debut because even after all these albums I've made, this is the first one on which it says Rachel Sage and The Sequins in the cover art. And I really am just trying to give these incredibly talented musicians their flowers, so to speak. Some of them I've been playing with for many years. A handful are, you know, the last few years, including my drummer, Andy Mack, my wonderful fiddle player, Kelly Halloran, who's actually been touring with Noah Cyrus and Goo Goo Dolls. So, you know, it's been great to see that happening. And my cellist, Dave Agar, so many different players on the record, but all of them are kind of rotating members of the Sequins. Some of them play with me frequently live and some just in the studio. There is a cover of God Bless America on there as sort of a teaser to a more kind of reflective and introspective song about gun violence in America. I kind of lure you in with a little patriotism, and then hopefully we can have a real sit down about just how messed up that is and try to do better. And then I have another song that's about actually bullying in some respects, and particularly in the LGBTQ plus community. So again, you know, there are these threads of just trying to be more compassionate, be more inclusive. And I really hope that comes across.
And the album comes out in?
The album comes out October 24th, but I'll be putting out a new single every few weeks until then. So a total of six. So it's exciting to be sharing almost half the album ahead of the album. And then each song really gets its own spotlight, own story, and actually its own video. So it's fast becoming a video album as well. We're going to have a total of seven videos.
I love that you're releasing an album, because I speak to a lot of artists these days and they say it's now about the single, it's now about the EP. People don't have the mind or the brain width to focus on an album. Yes, you've been doing it for a long time and you keep creating. Are you still a steadfast album staunch supporter person?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think I'm a hybrid, because these songs that are coming out ahead of the album aren't actually tied directly to the album. So they're coming out separately, standalone, as maxi singles with two different mixes on each one. One is the album mix, and then another is more of a radio kind of pop mix, I guess you'd say. And it's mixed by Grammy winner Andy Zula. So I'm just getting like all the best people I know involved in the project. And each song, like I said, will have its own kind of story, video, and hopefully some behind the scenes. So yeah, I think it's a hybrid, because I am doing these singles, all six of them, over the summer and the fall. And then at the end of that, light in the tunnel will be the album. And for those folks who enjoy listening to a record in that way, that's there for them. And also, I'm doing very, very special packaging this time. I'm a visual artist as well. I need to know that. But I kind of took it to another level, and I made a coffee table art book.
Oh, wow.
So it's a hardcover accordion that folds out and has 20 panels with my paintings and my lyrics. And it's a real keepsake. So even if you can't play the CD, it's going to be something that can just sit on your coffee table. You can look at paintings, and that tells the story in a different way.
I love that you've taken the image or the rollout as an accordion, because as you said that, I literally pictured the accordion opening and seeing all these beautiful paintings and stories come out. So I love that. So that's really cool. You're releasing your 17th album. What keeps you motivated to keep creating and keep releasing and keep performing?
People. I mean, you know, it's kind of like that thing they say, you live longer if you have an interaction and socialize with at least, you know, a few people every day, whether it's your local barista, your mother, your neighbor. And I think it's like that times, you know, 100 for me. When I'm home alone, isolated, I would still write music. I would still compose. I would play the piano. And it is a kind of therapy for me in some respects. But it's less and less about that at this point in my life. I really am so eager to be in the mix, part of a conversation, in communication, you know, in community, really. And and whether it's 20 minutes on a festival stage, 30 minutes opening for Hue and Cry, or 2 hours where I get to do two sets and sing and dance and play percussion and piano and guitar, have a full band, whatever it is, it does always feel to me like the audience is that last member of the band. It's different every night with them, unexpected and surprising. And dare I say, you know, occasionally magical things happen when we have that rapport and when we're singing along together. And I also do really feel strongly that joy is resistance. So that's why we picked the title for this particular tour I'm on right now. There are so many reprehensible and disturbing things happening, you know, in our governments in terms of immigration and just the world stage as a whole and war-torn areas. And it can really feel like we are powerless. We can't immediately change some of these things if we're not in control of those strings being pulled. But I have always believed, and now more than ever, that every single person is a universe. We all contain multitudes. And, you know, anything you say or do, even saying hello to someone with a warm smile in your eyes, I mean, it can turn around someone's day. It can keep them from wanting to harm themselves. It can, you know, just make them feel assured and go back to wherever it is that they are going to regroup and have a better day and have a better outlook. So that's really what this is all about.
In the entertainment, specifically the music world, there needs to be some form of structure and plans. Like, okay, I know I'm performing these days, this date. I know the album's being released on this date. But then music's all energy. Everything's energy flowing. And in, as you said, performing live is in that moment and it's flowing in that space. How do you, having experience being in the creative world for so long, balance the label side or the planning side compared to planning or letting it flow with the energy of creativity?
Sometimes I joke, you know, that who says I'm balancing anything? You know, I mean, I get sick a lot. You know, my doctor would tell you I'm not so balanced. But really, the upshot for me is hearkening to this conservatory mindset that I had as a kid, as a ballerina. And, you know, some of your listeners, this will resonate with them, I'm sure. Preparation, and then let it go. So like if you show up to an improv class, maybe amazing, magical things are going to happen that first or second or third time. But these people that we see on television doing improv or Saturday Night Live or whatever it is, when they're playing with the scene, with the bit or a great comedian, of course, they know it the back of their hand, like over and over and over, they practice it. And then in the moment, they can play with it and they can, something new can inform it and help it be spontaneous and there can be surprise. But if you're only peddling surprise and spontaneity, like you said, you're not going to have that structure. So I think that that approach applies to art making, you know, visual and musical and theatrical, anything, acting. And it also applies to the business. I think there has to be preparation and structure and discipline. And then you do have to sometimes let it go. And the same applies actually for production in the studio. I might go in with all the charts for all the musicians and we've rehearsed twice and we think we have a pretty good handle on what's going to happen. But someone plays a new idea. And if we're not all willing to kind of rally around that new idea in a cool way, it may not get to the next level. That's where the magic happens. I think it applies to running a label as well. I never really planned to release, you know, a rock album by James Mastro and a country album by Grace Pettis and, you know, an alternative record by Fragile Tomorrow. But these are artists and individuals whose music just spontaneously like slayed us. We took a big deep breath and then we thought, well, how can we work together with them? How can we move toward some shared goals on their behalf? So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if that really answered your question.
Yeah. No,
every
absolutely.
Day I wake up, I make a point to have a list of some kind of things I need to get through. I'm going to promote the gig I've got in Asheville next week. And I'm going to reach out to all my friends in New York to come down to the Mercury Lounge. And then I'm going to maybe work on my graphic design a bit for my record. But if I start getting an idea, it's going to just override all of that. And I'm going to need to go to a journal or a piano or something and honor that spontaneous muse, because that's my job. You know, I'm an artist. You got to wrestle with those muses.
I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 years, 5 hours, 5 minutes, I know your answer will be different every time. If you had to push play to five other artists once we finish this conversation, who would those artists be? And if you can think of songs of theirs, what songs would you play?
Push play on five other artists. Well, off the top of my head, Grace Pettis, who does happen to be on my label, but I really feel like her song "Working Woman" is such a seminal and, for our times kind of a song. It's all about honoring different women in the workplace, and it's badass. And then, let's see, Elvis Costello. I think it always just comes down to passion. My favorite song of his is still from Spike, "I Want You." It's just, if you ever are just feeling ambivalent about the world or like numb, if you put that on, it's impossible to stay in that state because just the passion level is so high, and he's just such a master at, capturing humanity. Let me see, what else? Oh, Sarah McLachlan has a new single, and I heard it yesterday, and it's on all her social media. I can't think of what it's called off the top of my head. Easy to find, but it really sounds like a lot of her older material that came out during Lilith Fair, that I used to just be obsessed with. So I'm really excited about that. Go check out Sarah McLachlan. I think James Mastro is phenomenal, and he's kind of like Americana folk rock. And then Kristen Ford, of course, she has a brand new single called Whiplash. I'm out on tour with her, and I swear this song is such a mega hit. But it's indie, so it needs people to spread the word. But it also asks for you to clap in the middle of it, and it's a super cute clap along. And the song kind of reminds me of Ed Sheeran, but with a feminist edge.
Yes, that's five. Your fourth one you said was James Maestro, correct?
Mastro, Mastro, and
Oh, James
he
Maestro, yes.
has been a side guy with people like Ian Hunter and Garland Jeffries, but he has his own music out now, and he just rocks, and all his guitar playing is amazing. So check him out for sure.
The podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
I'm gonna just steal this one from my drummer. It's the email signature and everything he sends me. Please be kind to yourself.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.